Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday at the Movies. Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Max Weiss from Baltimore Magazine are here with tips on what to see and what to skip, plus a recap of the Oscars. That was one weird ending on an historic night for a low-budget movie about coming of age and coming out in the ghetto. And that thing with the tour bus. Let's talk. The Midday Monthly Movie Mayhem, plus theater critic J. Wynn Russick stops by with her review of The Bodyguard, the musical at the Hippodrome Theater. That's all coming up right after the news. And good afternoon, everybody. It's the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Very glad you're with us. As always, Jed Dietz, the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival, is here. How you doing, sir?
Great.
Now, you should be down at the Parkway Theater, which is scheduled to open in 6 weeks or something, yep. Right? You should be hammering something. You should be soldering something. You should be, you know, hanging drapes. What are you doing here? I mean, I'm delighted to see you, but aren't you busy?
I've concrete this morning, and then I do some drapes this afternoon.
Okay. Yeah. Concrete and drapes. All in a day's work for the director of the film festival. And Jed, as happy as I am to see you, and after all these years, you walk into the room, and I'm like, be still my heart. You know? It happens every time. It happens every time. I am so excited because we have a guest, special guest,
yes,
movie maven, Max Weiss from Baltimore Magazine, is here in the studio. Good to see you, Max.
Hello. Good to see you guys.
Thank you for coming in. Max, of course, is the managing editor at BMAG and the film critic at Baltimore Magazine. You can catch her stuff at baltimoremagazine.net. She also writes about culture at vulture.com, which is the entertainment website of New York Magazine. So we've got lots to talk about. If you would like to join our conversation out there in Radio Land, give us a call, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, if you want to drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. So we don't usually talk about the Oscars in retrospect. We usually talk about the Oscars before they happen. We predict who will win. We're often wrong, and then we just move along and we just forget we even talked. But Max Weiss, I mean, this Oscar thing was wacky.
That was the most surreal, awkward, cringe-inducing thing I've ever seen on live television. And the sad thing is it sort of overshadows everything else. It's all anybody was talking about. And, you know, Moonlight, that was an incredible upset. Really, not many prognosticators saw it coming. It was a film that was made for $1.5 million, directed by a black man, about the black experience, the black gay experience. I mean, this film was so unprecedented. Unfortunately, all we're talking about is the big mess up, which was just staggering to watch. I feel sorry for those who turned off the TV early and they missed it. You know, they went to bed early, or maybe they announced La La Land and they turned off the TV.
Yeah, because it's 2 minutes and 19 seconds before anybody figured out that it wasn't La La Land.
Exactly. I mean,
it was the end of an overly long show, as they always are, and I almost turned it off at that point because I was assuming La La Land was going to win, as everybody had assumed. I was dying for Moonlight to win that or Best Director, and obviously Best Director had gone to Damien Chazelle for La La Land. So the minute it was announced, I thought, well, it's over. And for some reason, I didn't turn on the TV, and then all hell broke loose. I mean, who had seen anything like what Max said?
And here's who I blame in order. Obviously, the PricewaterhouseCooper guy who gave the wrong envelope, he's gone.
And here's something about that.
The
man's name is Brian Cullinan, but he and Martha Ruiz, his colleague from PricewaterhouseCooper, who was on the other side of the stage, Mr. Cullinan was stage left, Ms. Ruiz was stage right, they've both been banished from the Oscars.
A woman brought down by a man.
Right. What is her culpability in this? She seemed to do everything she was supposed to do, and
then he gets, I mean, you know, and it's interesting. Last night I happened to catch two television newscasts. NBC said that they had been fired from PwC, and CBS said that they had been let go from participating in the Oscars. So, but why her? I mean, she didn't do
it. No, it's completely unfair. Your outrage is correct. Why her indeed? I demand answers. But all right, so they're the ones who messed up. I also blame Warren Beatty, though. Because, look, I understand it's live TV and it's stressful, but he knew something was up. He opened the envelope. He saw that it said Emma Stone, La La Land.
Which was clearly wrong. Something
he peered
was wrong.
Back
because Ms. Stone had already received her award for that.
This was the last award of the night, right? So he peered in again. And, you know, everybody sort of thinks he's doing a bit, stalling or trying to be cute, including Faye Dunaway, who at that point was getting a little anxious, like, let's keep it moving, Warren. And so all he had to say was, I think I've been handed the wrong envelope. Instead, he hands it to Faye Dunaway, who, of course, at this point is anxious to announce the winner.
Right.
And he doesn't say anything to her. And so she announces La La Land. I feel like he threw Faye under the bus. Bonnie, under the bus.
I'm sympathetic to Mr. Beatty. I mean, I've been on a stage or two, and stuff happens on stage, and you just, you know, he had no, it would have been unprecedented him to have been handed the wrong envelope. That's the furthest thing from his mind. He's wondering probably at that moment, I'm just guessing here, he's wondering, what have I done?
Well, right.
Beatty is probably thinking at that moment, oh my gosh, I'm screwing up. What have I done? He's not blaming somebody else yet. He started blaming somebody else right after the show. He's called for clarification from Cheryl Boone, who's the president.
Isaacs.
Cheryl Boone Isaacs, excuse me, of the Academy of Motion Pictures. But I don't know.
So the silver lining, I would say, for both those films, both of which were small independent films. Moonlight had much less box office going into the Oscars, so will be helped much more than La La Land would have been. They're going to 1,500 screens, by the way. Not imaginable when this film came out that they would be on 1,500 screens. So we'll see what happens this weekend. But I assume it will get a big boost, and obviously A24, the distributor, is assuming they will get a big boost. So maybe the silver lining in this is a surprise upset for Moonlight has now been turned into an international event that will live in history. I mean, this is going to be one of those moments, going to be like the Streaker with David Niven or one of those things in Oscar history that nobody will ever forget and shouldn't. And I think it's interesting so far how the blame thing has panned out, because corporately, this could have been a killer for PricewaterhouseCoopers. I mean, 83-year history with the Oscars. It's part of their branding. Cullinan had been running this thing for a number of years, and exactly how they were going to, they and the Academy were going to thread this needle was not at all clear. And I think this is what they've chosen, is they get rid of, they just have a new team. And they, my guess is they don't even know yet. The Academy is not obligated to them, I don't think contractually, whether they continue this relationship. And they're now doing what they
hope. So they find some other accounting firm.
It doesn't matter to anybody but PricewaterhouseCoopers.
Right.
But I think it for sure matters to them. I mean, I'm sure this is a huge part of their whole business in L.A. And Cullinan, and I assume Ruiz, too, had a big portfolio for PwC in Los Angeles dealing with the movie companies beyond the Oscars. But I'm sure wedded to this presence. So it's a big deal.
My accountant doesn't take very long doing my taxes because they're not all that complicated. It's just, you know, there's not that many zeros in the numbers, you know. So, I mean, she's available. But, you know, it's interesting that Moonlight was the second lowest grossing film to win Best Picture. It grossed $22 million so far, only ahead of Hurt Locker, which you had at the Maryland Film Festival before it won the Best Picture Award.
Yep.
And that only grossed $14 million at that juncture.
We also had Best Director and Best Screenwriter at the festival because they won all three of those.
Yeah. See, you know who's going to win before the envelopes even start getting printed. But it's interesting that the television audience for this was the second lowest in Oscar history, right? And I guess that kind of correlates with the number of people who've seen the movie. So in other words, so few people had seen La La Land and Moonlight that they figure if those are the two that are up for it, who cares?
I think we have to accept the fact, there was actually an article to this effect in the Post this morning, that the Oscars just aren't what they used to be. In fact, none of these television events are what they used to be because people's attentions are so divided and there are so many entertainment options. People aren't going to the movies as much as they used to, period. They're certainly not going to see these, you know, more interesting kinds of films. Maybe they're going to see Doctor Strange or whatever, but even those things are going down. And just the idea that we can get everybody's eyeballs on one event at the same time, it's just not happening. Right. So I think we have to manage our expectations when it comes to the Oscars. It's not going to be this thing where everybody in America is watching anymore. And I think they have to adjust to that new normal.
Well, it is interesting because the bump that Moonlight will get from everybody watching it, the last part of it on YouTube, right, is probably way bigger than they could ever get from any television audience. I mean, you talk about right. The streaker, you know, David Niven and the streaker and stuff. I mean, Tony Brandon, the general manager here at WIPR, he streaks midday every Wednesday. Nobody even notices. You know, and thank God I'm facing the other way.
Yeah,
when
I'm
runs
glad
by
we're
the window.
On Thursday.
But, yeah, exactly. But yeah, I do hope that it doesn't overshadow the win because the film is extraordinary.
Yeah, because that's the thing. This is really significant.
It is so significant in so many different ways. You know, I mean, not just because of the quality of the film, but, you know, of course, there was this whole Oscars so white backlash the last couple of years. This feels like a direct positive response to that. I almost feel like this award was given not only to the best picture of the year, in my opinion. I had it as one tied with Manchester by the Sea, another film that I loved. But I also feel like it might be the Academy kind of sticking it to Trump in a way. You know, because this is not the kind of film that Donald Trump would necessarily like.
Or about maybe sticking it to themselves because they were in, you know, they really took a lot of heat the year right. before. So, maybe, you know, other people have said, you know, this is kind of an overreaction. I mean, the fact that Viola Davis won and you know, all that stuff. I mean, I you know, who knows what the minds of the voters, but they have changed literally the complexion of the voters in right. the Academy. Right.
No. Yeah. They added 680 members last year after the Oscar So White Oscar in 2016. And that's by far the largest number they've ever added. And it's a distinctly diverse group, you know, a group of much more color, more women, younger. And that's what the goals were. And they can't.
So this will bode well, not just for Moonlight, but for pictures like Moonlight.
Yep.
And for filmmakers like Barry Jenkins and for playwrights like, is it Terrence McNally? What's the guy's name? I'm always blanking on
Rainey.
That guy's name. McRaney. So, you know, maybe that's all good. But there was one other thing that happened in the awards show, which I want you guys to weigh in on. And that's that deal with the tour bus. So I mean, that ended up being pretty controversial. I mean, people supposedly, putatively taken off of a tour bus on Hollywood Boulevard or wherever that theater is in LA.
So quick history is there's been this, you know, the Oscars have always had a hard time trying to figure out how to keep a little bit ahead of the curve in the entertainment world. And what Max described a few minutes ago is true. Grabbing the eyeballs is even harder now for any television show. Gets harder every day. And so, you know, there have been these stunts. I mean, one of the famous really horrible ones was the Rob Lowe, Mickey and Snow White.
Yeah.
You know, opening dance number is sort of a legendary failure, but an attempt to be cute and fun and all that stuff. The choice of the host is part of that. And then Ellen DeGeneres did this thing with the pizzas a few years ago. She got great numbers. The pizza thing was praised. The selfie went completely viral.
She went out in the audience, took a selfie with a bunch of movie stars.
Yep. And so I think they've been looking for these gimmicks. And I think they had the gimmick of the candies parachuting down. That worked. I mean, they did it. It was quick and it sort of funny. And you could see movie stars reaching for the Good and Plenty's parachuting down or whatever. That had some fun. And then this tourist thing, I think I can get the idea of it. It's been interesting to me how whoever saw it, there were two different ways to see it. One was, okay, maybe it was a little dragged out, but it was sort of charming. And we had this Gary from Chicago and Denzel quote unquote married them and all that stuff. And then there's the other prism is this was a totally patronizing way to look at people who are not as privileged as you Hollywood jerks are. And that's fascinating because those are two completely different ways to, I mean, everybody agrees it was too long, but those are two different prisms. Yeah. And once again, the Oscars gave us sort of an insight into our own culture.
Yeah, and Max, you wrote about that.
Yeah, I did write about that. It did feel, unfortunately, like a little bit of noblesse oblige, like all these glamorous, beautiful people condescending to be kind to the little people who sort of, you know, stumbled in their hoodies and, you know, with their cameras. But, you know, what's interesting is these things you're talking about, Ellen taking the selfie, even the Matt Damon roasting. Do you remember when Dave Letterman was absolutely excoriated for the Uma Oprah? And at the time, it was seen that he had disrespected the grand tradition of the Oscars and disrespected the sort of sanctity of the space. Well, in recent years, it's really been more about humanizing the actors, right? Taking selfies, giving them pizza, and trying to make them more and more accessible. But this moment, unfortunately, with the tour bus, sort of seemed to really underscore the us-them quality that I think they've been working really hard to try to, you know, dispel, because it really did feel like, oh, isn't that cute? They're being nice to the little people.
Yeah. Well, and it's a risk they ran, and I, you know,
unfortunately,
most folks,
it didn't work.
Yeah, it really just didn't work.
And what do you guys think of all the Matt Damon roasting? Did you like it, or did you think it, like, went on too far? The engineer liked it.
Well, I know people who didn't know the history with the Matt Damon, Sarah Silverman.
I didn't know all that.
Jimmy Kimmel stuff. And I think if you didn't know that, it's weird because it looked like
a very inside joke.
Yeah, exactly. And so it probably didn't work. I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a pretty good job.
Yeah, he's a clever guy.
He's a smart fella. Max Weiss from Baltimore Magazine and Jed Dietz from the Maryland Film Festival are with us here. 410-662-8780 is how you can join the conversation. midday@wypr.org is our email address. @MiddayTomHall is our Twitter handle. Before we take a quick break, a quick note about a film festival that starts in just a couple of weeks on Sunday, March 19th. The Gordon Center for the Performing Arts in Owings Mills will present the 29th Annual Baltimore Jewish Film Festival. It'll run at the Gordon Center through the 30th of April. The festival will include dramas, comedies, and documentaries, including several Maryland premieres and post-screening conversations with experts and some of the filmmakers. We've got a link to more information on our website, wypr.org/midday. We will be back after a quick break. Stay where you are.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem. And by the way, coming up tomorrow on Midday, it's the Midday News Wrap. We'll take a look at the week's headlines with Jane Miller of WBAL Television, Farai Chidea, a fellow at the Shorenstein Center on Media, Politics, and Public Policy at Harvard University, and the activist and scholar Kay Wise Whitehead. Hope you can join us tomorrow for the News Wrap here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Today, if you've just joined us, it's the monthly Midday Movie Mayhem. As I just mentioned, Jed Dietz is the director of the Maryland Film Festival. He's here with me in Studio A, along with our special guest movie maven, Max Weiss from Baltimore Magazine and Vulture.com. You are welcome to join our conversation. We're talking about the Oscars and a couple of the new flicks that are out in theaters now. 410-662-8780 is our number. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So let's talk about Jordan Peele's new movie called Get Out. This is, at least in my head, highly anticipated, and I saw it over the weekend. My wife hated it. I felt much more positive towards it. But here's a movie that's a horror movie and a kind of a spoof on horror movies, and a very interesting and complex peroration on the state of race in America. Max, what did you think?
I mean, I loved it. I actually gasped that you said your wife didn't love it. I mean, it is a perfect blend of satire and social commentary and horror. And it starts out so ingeniously because we see a black man walking through the streets of the suburbs, And he ends up being the victim. So they sort of turn things on their head. You know, instead of the white fear of the black man walking through the suburbs, he becomes the victim. He's abducted. And then our lead character goes with his girlfriend to this sort of Tony house with her liberal parents who insist, and he's black and his girlfriend's white, what I should say, who insist that they would have voted for Obama for a third term if given the opportunity.
The father keeps saying, my man.
And he keeps calling him my man. Yeah.
I would have voted for Obama on for a third term.
Right. Yeah. And all the
memes of, you know, just hi, I'm a white liberal, guy. I have black friends.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. And so first the hero is sort of, he's tolerant, basically. He's kind of rolling his eyes a little bit, but going with the flow and being very polite and sort of taking little mental notes that this is just what happens. This is the experience of being a black man in America. And then little by little, he's like, wait a second, something truly sinister is happening here beyond just sort of bland, low-key racism. And that's the horror. So it's a genius concept, actually.
So there's lots of humor. I mean, you're right. There's this whole world of sort of wise guy horror movies that started with Scream and or certainly that is the first big hit that, you know, is in the movie tradition. And this is in that tradition, but it has this incredible, two things I would say. One is it's beautifully made. I mean, it's beautifully cast. The actors are wonderful. It's shot and
edited.
Yeah,
this guy that I never heard of, a guy named Daniel Kaluuya.
Yeah.
And then Allison Williams.
Yeah, who's from Girls.
Plays the evil Brian Williams' white daughter. Girlfriend.
Spoiler alert.
Right. And,
did
I do a spoiler alert? Yeah,
that's okay. That's okay. We'll skate right over. Maybe nobody noticed.
And Bradley Whitford, he was from
West Wing.
Yeah.
And Catherine Keener, the great actress Catherine Keener. So so that's one thing. The quality of the filmmaking is really extraordinary. And the other thing that's fascinating is what Max alluded to. This is a way, there's not preaching in this at all. I mean, there's a lot of humor, and then it goes into this horror mode. And the audience I saw it was jam, by the way, the night I saw it.
Yeah.
And the audience, the last 20 minutes, which if you know the genre, you know, is mayhem. Is people, I mean, I missed whole chunks of dialogue because people were cheering, and, you know, it was really a fun movie-going experience. But all through this, it is through the eyes of a privileged black man in America who had a white mom and a black father, went to Sarah Lawrence. He's had success in the entertainment
Jordan
world.
Peele, he's
yeah, Jordan Peele.
Yeah,
Jordan Peele.
The director and the writer.
Yeah. So
from Key and Peele.
Yeah. He's lived in a world of some integration and dealing with other people who are smart. I mean, these are not rednecks he's got insight in. This is white culture in America, and
people like us, basically.
Yeah, exactly. You know? He's done this. I've never seen this kind of thing done. Race is difficult in America, right? To get conversations going and keep them going in any sort of, you know, non-stereotypical, cliched way or angry way. And he's done it. That's what's so fascinating. Everybody will come out of this actually learning something. And I don't want to say that too loud because it's fun and it's a great horror movie.
And Key and Peele, which I think is probably the best show ever on television. I love that show. I just thought those guys both are just absolutely incredibly gifted. They were one of the great teams to comment on race. You know, they started doing this back, you know, when they started this thing on Comedy Central. So Mr. Peele is well versed in this subject. No question. It's interesting that he chose a horror movie as the genre. That's kind of
a funny horror movie. Yeah.
Horror can be a great sort of prism to show us what's going on in our society. I mean, one of my favorite all-time favorite shows is Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Oh. And that is a great sort of merging of horror and social commentary. And it's almost disarming because if he were to make a sort of preachy film about white...
Guess who's coming to dinner.
Liberalism and sort of, you know, hipster racism, that would be no good. But this has a riveting story. It has comedy. And then one thing that I love... There is an absolute cliche, and unfortunately it's true, that in horror films, the first person to die is almost always the black man, right? So in this case, our hero, the person that we're rooting for and hoping that he's going to make it through, it's all seen through his eyes. Even that in and of itself is radical, that it's a black man at the heart of this horror film. And again, the actor is very charismatic, and I think he's a real find. And yeah. Jordan Peele, I mean, what a home run for a first. This is his first time directing something.
It grossed $30.5 million in the opening weekend, assuming it does strong. It continues to be strong this coming weekend.
It's going to break records this week.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
which
astonishing.
Which is good for him. It's first time. I mean, he's never directed anything.
I mean,
before,
he just nailed it.
TV
I actually
show.
Feel yeah. sorry for him because now he's got a lot of pressure for his second film. And sophomore slump is a concern at this point.
You are such a worrier, Max.
Oh,
my God.
I do.
He hasn't
worried.
Released the movie yet.
Well, it's true.
Max Weiss is the managing editor of Baltimore Magazine and the film critic for the magazine. She also writes at vulture.com, which is the entertainment website of New York Magazine. Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. They join me here for the Midday Monthly Movie Mayhem. You are welcome to join us as well. 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. So I did see Get Out in a suburban theater, the Towson Cinemark Theater. It's the first time I'd been up there. And I have to say that Linnell didn't like the movie as much as I did, but the experience of going to the movie there, I did not find very great. And this is not to slam the good people who've invested and, you know, created the Towson Cinema. It was mobbed, first of all. The whole place, all of the restaurants were mobbed. The parking lot was mobbed. The street was mobbed. There was lots of people around. The movie was very full. But boy, the experience of going to the movie there, I just must be an old fogey or something. I do like going to films at the Charles and the Landmark and the Senator. First of all, I found the audio. I mean, I'm a professional musician, so yeah. Maybe I'm a little hypersensitive or something. It's so loud. There seems to be this propensity for just blasting the volume of whatever they're broadcasting. And if it's a rotten trailer or rotten music or rotten anything, making it louder makes it rottener, you know? And so I was really taken by that. But I was also, we sat there for almost 25 minutes watching television commercials and trailers. Mm. Not just trailers, but television commercials. Mm. And you're a captive audience, literally. You're sitting in the theater waiting for the movie to begin. I just, the experience of it was off-putting. Is this what we're in for?
Yeah, I'm afraid a little bit. So the economics of studio movie exhibition, which is what multiplexes like the Cinemark Towson, which I think does beautiful projection and sound, although I agree with you about the volume. Their economics are terrible. I mean, the studio, a big hit movie, a Star Wars, something like that, they would typically, the deal would be 10% of the ticket price goes to the theater, 90% goes to the studio. That usually slides down a little bit, but given the way movies are marketed now, those first couple of weeks are the big grossing weeks. So they really are left with, as Cinemark is trying to do, figuring out how to enhance the concession experience for customers so you'll spend more money, you know, triple.
So they're making the money on the popcorn and the candy and the drinks.
And
because now they have an alcohol. There's a lot of these theaters now have bars where you can buy alcohol.
Yep, hugely important. It's been for now a number of years. The concession take is, because that's, I mean, the profit from that you don't share with anybody. And then they keep looking for other revenue streams and selling ads before a movie, which is very common in Europe, but has been very, very controversial here. I mean, just a few years ago at the Charles, a marketing company came to them and said, we'll give you, this goes, one of the early digital projectors, we'll give you one of these digital projectors if we can run these ads for, I think the first one was for BMW, made by great filmmakers. Ang Lee maybe made the first one. I can't even remember who it was, but a really Academy Award winning filmmaker. And it was a disaster. People, I mean, the audience rebelled and said, I'm not coming to this thing. You know, you told me the movie started at 7, and no, it didn't. It started 25 minutes later, and 10 minutes of it was this friggin' BMW ad that I didn't pay to see. And so but they're just trying to figure all this out. I mean, yeah.
So,
but the seats are super comfortable at the Movie Co. I mean, let's give credit. Good. I mean, at least you're sitting there for 25 minutes, but you're comfortable.
Yeah. that's a thing too, Jen. I mean, aren't there now fewer seats in these movie theaters for that very reason? They're not trying to cram
people. They're like
barca loungers. It's not the Southwest Airlines approach where you just throw as many seats on a plane as you can. I mean, they're spreading the seats out, and they are barca loungers, you're right, because I guess a lot of people are used to watching movies in their homes like that. They have these gigantic, what do they call them, you know, theater rooms or entertainment centers or whatever, something. They don't, you know, you never call it the family room anymore. It's just like, it's the entertainment center. And they have these huge Barca lounges to sit in at home.
Yeah, and that is an experiment happening as we speak. I mean, we have, you know, retrofitting going on in some theaters like Scott Cohen's theaters, the RC theaters in this region have done retrofitting from and taking down capacity significantly, and revenue's gone up because they put in these beautiful chairs. So now people will drive past something else to get to one of his theaters. And Brand New opened last weekend and had a great gross last weekend. It was this Cine Bistro, which is at the Rotunda, which has also these great chairs and also, I mean, they're marketing food. I haven't been there yet, but have, you know, food and
chairs.
Like real food.
And with
real
waiters, food, yeah. I mean, it's decent cuisine or very good cuisine.
That, I haven't tried it either. But
the waiters bring it to you in your Barca lounge.
Right. It's like steak frites. I mean, you know, it's not popcorn.
Right.
Here's the thing. Can you guys drink before you see a movie? Because I cannot.
Absolutely not.
I will fall asleep.
Absolutely
if
not.
If I have a glass, you know, a nice glass of Chardonnay before the film, I will be snoring in the theater. So that's not happening. So,
well, I think even these chairs, the book is out on this. You know, they're, I mean, the theaters are hoping to find this new model.
Yeah.
And big chains, AMC, Regal, I mean, people are, you know, really sophisticated exhibitors are trying it. We've gone through a whole process, obviously, at the Parkway about what kind of seats to have there. And I think we've made wonderful decisions and they're going to be incredibly comfortable. And we've got tables on some of them and it'll be great.
I'm not an expert, but I'm not recommending wooden benches.
Good advice.
If you can keep people from not looking at their cell phones during the theater, then you will be a hero in my book, because that's the number one thing that drives me insane. Those illuminated phones and people actually answering their phones in the theater. I mean, it's so rude. So if you can keep that from happening at the Parkway, I think you're going to have an elevated level of clientele and they won't be doing that. But that's got to be your goal.
And some of these theaters are now, I guess they call it 4D.
So there is a 4D theater,
3D,
yeah.
Which you can get. Is that like IMAX and stuff? Or that's the thing
put
where
the
you
glasses.
Put the glasses. So 4D means
okay.
Like.
So this actually happened to me once. I was sitting in a theater, I think it was at White Marsh, and I didn't realize that I was in the 4D. D row. I should have noticed because the seat was a little different. It had like more stuff attached to it somehow. And there's some sort of chase scene or avalanche scene or something happening on screen. And all of a sudden, my seat starts to shake and rumble. And I legitimately thought that there was an earthquake happening. And I'm looking around. And
you did not immediately relate that to the film.
I did not even slightly relate it to the film. I didn't realize that I was having a 4D experience. I thought that my life was in grave danger, actually. And then I suddenly realized what was happening. So maybe if one is prepared for the 4D experience, it's a better experience. My experience was not so good.
410-662-8780 is our number if you want to chime in on movies, on the Oscars. If anybody's been to the Cine Bistro in the Rotunda, it'd be great to hear what your experience was like. Midday@WIPR.org is our email address and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. It's the monthly Movie Mayhem here on Midday, and Jed Dietz and Max Weiss are here with me in Studio A. Let's talk about a German film, a comedy called Tony Erdmann. You guys have both seen it. Jed, what'd you think?
Yeah, nominated for Academy Award. It's been a big hit in Europe. People have loved it. I was not wild about it. I thought the female lead, Sandra Hüller, I thought was sensational. And there is a scene in the end of the movie that's worth the price of admission. And I don't want to give anything away, but it's a party scene that is like nothing I've ever seen on film. It's a father trying to loosen up his business daughter. She's very focused on career, very buttoned up. And he does this by appearing, you know, at completely odd times in her social life or her business life, sometimes wearing false teeth, sometimes wearing a wig, sometimes playing himself, sometimes playing this character, Tony Erdmann. And I found him just totally annoying and I was ready to get out of there. But I mean, it's an interesting thing. And the director is somebody that is a rising star in Europe filmmaking community. So
here's the thing. It's funny because Jed and I are so in the minority here. Like, this film has gotten such critical accolades. And I felt the exact same way that Jed did. I thought the lead character was so irritating to me. This felt like a American film as filtered through a German sort of sensibility, and something got lost horribly in translation. It goes on. It's like 3 hours long, right, which is just absurd for this comedy. And yes, it sort of wears you down after a certain point. There's some things about it that I liked. I agree with you. I think Sandra Hüller is brilliant. But ultimately, it did sort of feel like the kind of film that, you know, if it were made in America back in the day, it might have starred Robin Williams, you know, teaching his daughter to embrace life and be goofy. And then, you know, he's wearing like this wig and these false teeth. And then at the end of the film, she puts on the false teeth. And it really turned me off. But I will give it some credit. It's bizarre enough that it's almost worth checking out to see if you sort of vibe with its particular sensibility. And it does have some interesting things to say about women in the workplace, mm-hmm, because she's sort of exploited in the workplace. And that's part of the reason why she's brittle. And there are a few show-stopping scenes. There is a scene when she sings a Whitney Houston song that's amazing. There is a clothing optional brunch that is an incredible scene. But for the most part, he just worked my last nerve. And I'm with Jed.
Clothing optional brunch. That does not sound too appealing.
Well, you haven't had one of those, Tom?
No, I have not. I'm happy to say I have not. We may have a clip of this next one I want to talk about. I'm not sure. It's called Before I Fall. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
Maybe for you there's a tomorrow. Maybe there's 1,000 or 10. But for some of us, there's only today.
Mommy says you have to get up.
It's Saturday.
Maybe for you there's a tomorrow. What happened last night?
What are you talking about?
Seriously? So funny.
Been having deja vu all day long.
It's all high school things. It's just a blip.
Watch out for the truck.
What truck?
Regardless of anything I do or say, the day starts and ends the same.
Watch out for the truck. All right, so this is the premise of this is that this is this character's last day. So what'd you think, Jed?
Well, I liked it a lot. I saw it at Sundance. The filmmaker is a woman named Mariah Russo Young, who's been at the festival, has worked in the smaller independent film world. The young adult novel world is not a world I know much about. I'd never heard of this before. I didn't know any of the actresses, but I think it's so beautifully done, and it sort of brought me in. I mean, I'm not the core audience, and I thought it was really good, and I think these actresses did a great job. And it's about bullying, but it has a real entertainment value. And the other thing I would say is it's set in a public high school in the Northwest. I've never seen a public or private high school that looks this great. But I think they filmed Rye said that they filmed in a real high school.
I'm glad they're funding the school somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere. Good.
Someone characterized it as Mean Girls meets Groundhog Day.
Yeah,
She keeps living the same day over and over again, and she's in this pack of sort of popular girls, and they're very judgmental of their peers. And what's interesting is it really is sort of compassionate to her and her friends. And that was the thing that I found so interesting about it, that it's like it actually kind of takes you inside the mind of a mean girl.
Very good. Well, you are not a mean girl at all. You are a very nice girl to show up and hang out with us this afternoon, Max. I really appreciate it. Jed, good to see you. That's all the time we got.
Great to see you.
Thanks.
Fun.
My pleasure.
Max Weiss is the managing editor of Baltimore Magazine and a writer at Vulture.com, the entertainment website of New York Magazine. You can find her film reviews at the Max Space page on Baltimore Magazine.net. Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. They will be moving into their new digs at the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Parkway late next month. Jed Dietz and Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post will be back for the Movie Mayhem on the first Thursday of April. And I want to let you know now that on Friday, April 28th, about a week before the Maryland Film Festival begins its annual smorgasbord of films from around the world, Midday will be broadcasting the Movie Mayhem live from the Parkway. You are welcome to join us and get a sneak peek at the new home of the Maryland Film Festival. Again, that's Friday, April 28th at noon, so stay tuned to WIPR for information that will be forthcoming about how you can reserve your free tickets to that event. Our theater critic, Jay Wynn Russick, is up next with her weekly review. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.